This is Frida Riebel, and this is my podcast. Welcome to the third episode of this podcast. If you guys are still listening and this is episode 3, well, I don't even know what to say about that. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. It means the world to me. I'm having so much fun doing this and I feel so creative, and I made a little office and I sit in here and feel really important. No, but I really love doing this podcast. So thank you so much for listening. Today, we're going to talk about Mustangs. I want this episode to be dedicated to the 3 Mustangs that I keep dearest to my heart. And those are the stories that I'm going to share today. Their names are Philomena, Stevie, and Kahili. They are all girls. That's just how it happened to be. I didn't set out to only have girl Mustangs, but that's how it was. We're going to talk about stigmas around Mustangs. These stigmas. Yeah. What do I think is different about Mustangs? Or do I even think there is something different? Or are they all just horses? How do I train Mustangs? Do I have specific training methods for them? And then I have some listener questions. So here we go. The first stigma that comes to my mind that I think a lot of people... I mean, I'm not going to say a lot of people, but I have had several people tell me, so, oh, you're a Mustang trainer? You train Mustangs? And I always say, no, I mean, yeah, I've had some Mustangs, but I'm not a specific Mustang trainer. I know there's some people that say that they specialize in Mustangs. I mean, I guess I just specialize in horses, the entire breed of horses, because I don't think that it's different. I think the difference is, you know, I guess thoroughbreds are bred to run really fast and quarter horses sometimes to key on cows, maybe. Mustangs, I mean, I guess not that they're bred, but it's become the way of nature is to make them strong and like the survival of the fittest, and it makes them very hardy. And all the Mustangs that I've met are unbelievably strong mentally and physically. So, I mean, these stigmas about, it's almost like they're a whole different animal. I had a friend say to me, we made a joke about it. She was like, oh, I'm really interested in a Mustang. But yeah, there's that stigma. Like, wait, are they even horses or are they dogs? You know, and it's like, yeah, that's kind of how I feel sometimes, that people talk about them like they're not even a horse. It's like a whole nother animal, like this wild species that's just no one really knows what to do with. And it comes with all of this, like, ugh, yeah, ooh, that's a Mustang? It's almost like you have, I don't know, I love dogs that are mixed dogs. I love mutts, you know, but there's, you know, I mean, each his own, and there's people that only want to buy a purebred dog, and they only love a specific dog, and they have to look a certain way. I'm like, I'm more about, like, the personality. I'm like, I don't set out for my friends to look a certain way. Be like, I only have super tall friends. Like, such a weird thing to say, in my opinion. I mean, I feel like all my friends look different, and I'm not friends with them because how they look and where or where they grew up or what type of breed they are. I am friends with them because I like who they are and they resonate with me. And some of my horses happen to be Mustangs. And I think that's how we should look at that stigma. Just, you know, I think people are uneducated. And I'm not going to say people are uneducated. That sounds so tight. More that I mean that I think a lot of old information and a lot of history and in America, you know, with the government and horses and BLM, and it's just, it has like, as a brand. Yeah, I mean, all the horses are from BLM or have a brand. I mean, they even tattoo to stamp what they are. So Yeah, I think it's a stigma that we all just have to move on from, that Mustangs are horses, and let's just leave it at that. That's all I have to say. A horse is a horse is a horse. There you go. I also have come across some really lovely people that are looking to adopt horses or, you know, even buy horses. So, you know, you can kind of say it's the same thing. It just goes through different organizations, and depending on how you want to view it, I mean, I should say taking on a horse, and they've really been interested in having a Mustang and start from the beginning, and like, it's super cool to be the only human maybe that your friend, that your horse has befriended, and I am super into that too. I love that you get like a clean slate, but then the issue of like some boarding places haven't wanted to take in Mustangs, and it's like, well, maybe I shouldn't have a Mustang because people might think a certain way about me or about my horse. And I do really understand that. You know, it's like I've had cribbers, and I personally love crib horses. They're very, you know, determined. They're very like, I am gonna crib. And no matter what you do, they do it. So I think that if you get a Mustang, it's like, yeah, you have a horse. And then I understand that there's places where you might want to board. But if they're not against Mustangs, but if there's a stigma around Mustangs at that facility, then maybe that is not for you. Maybe you should just be somewhere where people just embrace you and love you, and everyone treats your horse just the same as anywhere else. I think that's, it goes for everything in life. We should try to surround ourselves with people and animals and community that accepts us. And if they don't, I mean, go find another family. You know, let's just surround ourselves with positive energy. It is 2020 after all. So yeah, get with it, people. How do I view training of Mustangs? You know, before I recorded this, I wrote about it and I thought a lot about it. How do I train Mustangs? Is there a difference in the way that I do training? I must say no. I really don't think so. I think that, one, it all depends on what type of Mustang is it, or like what type of horse is it that you get into training. Let's say I get a horse that's a young horse. Like Stevie, she came from the BLM, and she was born in captivity, but born in a BLM facility, and she had never been handled by people. So then it's like, she came and she wasn't terrified of the sight of a person, but she didn't want to interact or be touched by a human. And then it's like, so she was like 18 months, 2 years old. I think that's like a whole different type of blank slate that you have to deal with than if you take in like a 15, 20 year old stallion that has not been in a holding facility, or super briefly, that's like led a herd of horses its entire life. I mean, I haven't done that, but I must think that maybe then the horse have so much more experience in life in general, that they have a more sense of self, if that makes sense. But I think that that goes for all other horses too. Like, if I've had a thoroughbred that comes to me as a four-year-old coming off the track, their mindset is completely different than when I get a thoroughbred that's like 18, has had a bunch of different owners in the meantime. Then you're not getting a mind that just wants to go fast, 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 and that's all they've been doing because maybe they've been on trails and they've had nice owners in the middle. I mean, if you get a Mustang in to training, or you take on a Mustang that has only had kind humans and maybe not even been touched by humans, but humans that have provided food and water and shelter, but that's been kind, yeah, that's a whole different thing. I think the most difficult might be if you have a horse that is a Mustang, that, and this I have experience, where the Mustang's only interaction with humans have been negative for very long periods of time, then it's almost like the humans become almost like the predator, like a lion or something like that. We don't become a source of anything good. And that is hard to work through. And it takes a lot longer than maybe when you work with a horse that haven't had any experience at all. I mean, my favorite thing, like I love it. And I'm not going to say that it's easy, because it's not easy, but it's been pretty, it's been not streamlined. I don't know what the word, it's been a softer way of when I have had younger Mustangs that hasn't had bad experience with people. They come and they are just so open because people starts representing just positive things and they don't ever associate humans with bad stuff. So then if a human does something bad, it's almost like they're shocked because they didn't see that coming. And I think there's something so innocent and so beautiful about that. And I'm always so scared when I adopt them out because it's almost like a little child that is just like so innocent and gentle and pure, and then all of a sudden he goes out in the world and he noticed that not everyone is going to be the way that they thought. So I don't think I train them so different. The only thing that I might do different when I start a horse, but this would also go for like a warm blood or thoroughbred or whatever breed, if they came to me and never had been ridden, I think less is more. But that's just kind of how I work. I mean, like, I am all about saddles. I think saddles are great. I'm just a little bit scared with a young horse who gets stuck in the stirrup. So I always use safety stirrups, for example. But I'm always thinking, like, if I'm not using any tack, it's safer for the horse. It can't get tangled in anything. I can't get tangled in anything. And it's also easier for the horse to say no. And if I'm able to ride any type of breed, any horse, with nothing on, I feel so safe, and I feel like it's really on both of our terms. So with Mustangs, yeah, if you're going to start a horse from the beginning like that, I mean, like, less is so much more than anything you do from there. It's just play, basically. If you can ride a bareback, I mean, like, why couldn't you then use a saddle for your horse's comfort and your comfort? And it's almost like, yeah, less is more is the only way that I can put it. And, you know, I got a question about, okay, so what order do you teach the horse things if it's a Mustang? I mean, I don't really think there's an order to it. Like with all horses, again, and I know it's like, I know a lot of people look for a technique, like they want a manual, a book that they can follow. But if we could just try to like get away from that for a minute, I think it would be really eye-opening, and you feel liberated when you can do so, because then you can just kind of feel what the horse needs. So, I mean, I always start with them being comfortable around me. What by me not asking anything, by me, like, I don't want them to flinch when I bring food or when I provide water, for example. That's number one. After that, I mean, like, if we can then be in the same space together. And I try to take away, like, the whole fear thing, that I don't want to represent any fear. Then we go into interaction with, like, touch. And then if the horse and you have, you know, and this thing, I really got to talk about this, that they called breaking someone in. Let's just never say that. Like, breaking, I don't want to break someone. I don't want to break anything. In Sweden, we call it att rida in, which means riding someone in. I mean, that I can go with. But, and this also, like, what people say, what is it called? Oh, yeah, let's gentle this horse. What do you mean? It's gentle. It's like, it was born gentle. It's a horse. It's like a kind animal. It's gentle. Like, nothing you can do to gentle it. I mean, so be gentle. The horse will be gentle, and then you're both gentled. And then from there, so I'd like to call it befriend. Yeah, that's what we're going to call it. When we befriend our Mustang friend, Then, if you're able to touch all over the body, lift their feet, all that kind of stuff, groom, scratch, all that, you can introduce halter. But it's also like, you know, 99% of people are going to have a halter on their horse at some point. You know, that's just, I mean, that's realistic. And that's always my goal, because I want the horse to be free in a way to be able to use all tools and not be scared of anything. To me, that represents more freedom than nothing. And that's just how I view it. I view it as like, if your horse can do anything, then there's nothing they have to overcome or fear. Then it's like the world is just so large. So then I would lead without the lead rope, but maybe with the halter on, like that I would have the horse follow me around and be my friend and want to follow me around. And then if I click a lead rope on and it's already following me with the lead rope, you kind of add a little bit of pressure and you reward. And then after that, I mean, like, sure, then you kind of have to take it as it comes with the horse that you're working with. It's like, sure, you want to teach it to back up, but if it's a horse that is like really, really forward, then maybe start with a lot of leading and like walking on the trail and like walk around and do fun stuff. If it's a horse that's a little more laid back and super cool and easy, maybe start with the cue for like standing still or backing up. It's like so different depending on the individual horse and what is their vibe. Like, what are they good at? Like, what do they like to do? That's where I would start. Scratch gentling. Just befriend your horse. Another question that I got was, how do you work with Mustangs and food? And I would answer that the same as any regular horse as well. Some horses I train with food, some I don't, some we do sometimes, but for example, with Mustangs, I would, depending on the situation they've been in, if this is a Mustang that's lived in the wild his whole life and been able to access grazing all the time, then it's important that we can like provide that so we create the least amount of trauma as possible. That they can maybe always have a slow feeder or a hay net or provide hay and or something that they're always stimulating and can always graze. If it is a horse that's been starved, and this goes for any horse again, but I think maybe especially Mustangs, if they've had really then just bad experience with people that they've been starved, it's then important to always provide food. The never that they have to do something to get the food. It could be like, if you always provide hay pellets, any kind of food that's basic, that should always be there. Even when you're training, always have it in front of them. If then they still choose to interact with you, and sure, you can then you can use the same food that they would go and eat on their own, and always for them to have that option, then I think that would be the key, because you're then taking away the panic of the food, and like they don't have to fear about like, okay, so I wait, what do I have to do? What trick do I have to do to get the food? You have to like kind of take that out of the equation it's not a bribe. It's like a play and an incentive. Like, let's do something fun. That's what it's about. I don't want it to be like something forced so they get something to eat. So my Mustang girls, there's been more Mustangs, but these have been like the ones that I've worked the most with and the ones that have really taught me the most. And I will start with Philomena. Philomena, we call her Philly. She came to us about 7 years ago, so 2013. She's actually not a BLM horse. She is born in the wild. Her whole herd for at least 200 years, they have evidence of them being in the Mojave Desert. There's this wonderful person. Her name is Diana Palmer. You can find her on Facebook. And she as the guardian of these wild horses. I think at least in 2013, there was about 100 to 120. And every year around Memorial Day, so it's coming up, they do a roundup. And a few of them have to get adopted out, and they also do some gelding and some things like that, just because the land that they live on can only sustain around 100 to 120 horses. But their roundup is not what you think of when you think of a roundup. And I've come to realize when talking to this wonderful woman that it's like, it's if they wouldn't do this, the horses would have to move, or they would have to do something else to the herd, because the land, they would starve. There's not enough food for them. And then the winters, when they've tried to not adopt out a few, and we're talking like 5 to 10 a year, it's become harder for all the overall group during the winter. And they do supply hay for these horses too. They go out and they do hay stations for them when it gets really low on the forage out there for them. And so they have some corrals that they open up, and the horses walk in there by themselves, and little by little they close and the herds stay close by, and then slowly they walk away. And there's a few horses left there, and there's food provided for them and water, and they're in there for a few days. And then when you load, they back up the trailer, the horse gets to eat inside the trailer and walk in and out. And it's a very peaceful experience. And I struggled so much when Philly was little, because I was like, I felt this enormous sense of guilt taking her from there. But it's also like, I don't want to be like, oh, the name of the game, but it's like, for the overall of the better of that herd, this is how they're doing it. And I knew that I could provide a beautiful home, and I had a giant pasture, and there was 20 other horses in it. So I knew that she was going to have a good life. So I came around and I saw the positive in it, that yes, of course, I always wanted her to be able to stay there. But since that opportunity is not a thing, then I will provide the life that I can, and that will be okay. So how do I pick her? You know, she was in there, and there was like a few other in there, and everything, you know, they were really calm and peaceful, and I was able to go in there with them and sit on the ground, and she kind of came over. She wouldn't sniff me, but she was pretty interested in me. And then I was just like, yeah, okay, well, let's go home. You can be our girl. And I had her in a really large pipe corral that was attached to the pasture, so all the other horses could come up to her and like see her over the fence and like groom her and talk to her. And I had her in there for about 9 days. And after 9 days, she let me pet her and halter her and talk to her. And I didn't have to do anything. It was more like I befriended her and we became friends. And then after doing that, I opened the pipe corral and it led out into the pasture, and she ran out there, and she was friends with all of those horses, and she knew really well how to function in a herd, and she was still, you know, super cool and friends with me. So when I would go out there and get her and be like, hey, let's go back and we can spend some us time, she was always up for that. So then that's kind of how that went. And she was still really young, and I gave her about a year where she was just out in pasture, and then she would see me every day, and we would like, you know, hang out even with the herd. And you know, it was just like one day I just hopped on. It seems like such a crazy thing to just like hop on your horse, but she knew me so well that there was nothing to be scared of. And I just used a big rock, and I was hanging on her, and I was scratching her all over. And then I got up and I rode around in the pasture, and that was that. And there's no special technique to it. It's just trust. She trusted me. And a year after that, she now works. Yeah, I would say work, because it is work. She takes care of a lot of kids. She is a service horse for handicapped children. And they come and they spend time with her, and they sit on her. And she's just so good. And she's, you know? So having her taught me to give other horses to Mustangs. I think that's one of the most important things that we can give Mustangs is room and other horses, because that's what they come from and that's how most of them grow up. And I mean, I think the same thing should go for all horses, but you know, like a warm-blood baby might grow up in a stall and corrals, and they're separated and they don't necessarily play with other babies and they don't learn the same horse life or herd mentality. So, but if you have a Mustang that's grown up that way, I think it's very important to be able to provide a herd for as comfort for them. Stevie was a different experience. She actually came to a little rescue and she was a horse there. Philomena was not. Philly was my personal horse. Stevie came to the rescue and she was actually purchased through an online auction. And you see a photo and you put in a bid. And then she was born in captivity in a holding facility. And she was about 18 months, we think. So I wasn't at the facility, but this is how they told us they did it. They backed the trailer up to a pen and then they put the Mustang in there in the pen. And then it's so small, and then they go from the side and they halter the horse from above and they halter it, and then they make the space smaller until the horse runs into the trailer, they close it, and they drive. And I mean, in this episode, I'm not going to go in so much on what I think about the BLM or what I think about Mustangs not being free. That's like a whole book. I feel like that's like college credit. There's so much to say about it. So I'm just going to focus on like the positive and the good parts about what they brought into my life. And we live in this society, and in this society, this is how it's become. I'm not saying that it's right, but I'm saying that this is the situation that we're in, that there's like 40 to 50,000 wild horses in captivity, and they got to go somewhere. They got to live somewhere. And I am for it. Everyone, go out and get a Mustang. If we all got one, there wouldn't be any in the holding facilities, and they wouldn't just stand in there. So go get one. Get on an online auction. Do anything, because they need out, because they are not free when they're just standing in there. But so Stevie came and we put her in a corral and she was by herself and she had a halter on, and we befriended her first from outside the fence and we brought her food and water, and she wasn't really scared of us being around her, but she was like, definitely, I don't think I want you to touch me. So we respect that. And then we were in there every day. There was like a little stump from a tree in there that we can sit on. And we just kind of took our time. And then one day, because she had the halter on, I clicked a lead rope onto it. And then she had a lead rope on. Because she wouldn't really come to me so that I could touch her automatically. So she had this lead rope on. And I thought that, you know what, maybe it's also good for her to learn a little bit of pressure from the leader. So she would step on it and not panic. But she'd be like, oh, if I step off of it, it relieves the pressure. And she was fine with it. And then I would hold a lead rope. And like, she would be cool with that, and she'd follow me on the lead rope. And then after a couple of days of doing that, I cut the lead rope off. So eventually it was just a little stump. And then I could even walk all the way up to her and grab the little stump. But it was like this little lead rope was like our little pathway. And then she just walked up to me all the way and I touched her face, and then I could take her halter off, and she never had that on again. And it wasn't like a big deal. And then Stevie was just like, Stevie changed so much in my life. Oh, I miss her so much. She has a wonderful home with a terrific person today. And she's been someone's, you know, personal horse. And it makes me so happy. And she has friends and she lives a good life. you know, she just taught me so much. She was like, she taught me about, I get emotional when I talk about it, but she was like one of those first horses that I didn't even like, what is Liberty horsemanship or what is this or what is that? I didn't really know. And I never set out to do anything a specific way, but everything was so easy with her. Doing everything tactless. And I mean, like with Philly, I could get on her and she'd walk around by herself. And I was just like happy to be on. But it wasn't that we didn't have the same connection as I did with Stevie. With Stevie was more like, I could go right, I could go left, we could go on the trail, we could do like tricks. Like Philly wasn't really into that. She was more like, you're cool, you know, we're doing our thing, and we rode in a halter and we went on the trail, and she liked following other horses. But Stevie, like, she was so into it. She like couldn't wait for us to go to the arena and train. Like, she couldn't wait for, what are we gonna do now? I brought a baby pool and folded with water, and she was like excited about it. I brought a giant ball and I bounced it off of her body, and she was like, that's so cool. She was just like really into everything we did, and she like really, really loved people and wanted interaction with people, and she wanted us to like do cool stuff together. And that, she really changed me in that way, that there are horses that really love to work. Because most of the horses that I get in, they really don't, they're not that way. Because they're like, oh, humans make me work. And then we kind of slowly turned it around to something fun. But with Stevie, it was like, the minute we started doing stuff, she was like, this is great, let's do more. And yeah, I will always appreciate that, because that's the spirit that I look for, like that joy for work or for play is what I keep as like a measuring stick when I train other young horses now, or other horses in general, but especially young horses. I want them to find that happiness in doing things together that Stevie did. Kahili was different. She wasn't different, but she also came from a different type of Mustang situation. She actually came from Nevada. She was born in the wild with a giant herd, and it was a part of something called the Dan Sisters. The Dan Sister herd, they lived on a land. The government took it over. The horses were not branded as BLM, and they were all taken off the property. And then it's a little murky story, like what actually happened. But she did end up in California and at a wonderful person that treated her well. Didn't do anything with her, but had her in like a pen. And from there, I felt like at that point, I had my horses. I had like 7 personal horses. And here was this fantastic, young, beautiful, like she's so beautiful. She's like, and she had like this super serene peacefulness about her. And I was not in a place to take on another horse, but I truly felt like she needed to come and be with me. Kaylee never needed me. I don't ever think she really wanted to be with me, but she loved my horses. She loved the freedom of being back in the herd and being with them. And we were super cool, and we befriended each other in the pasture, and you know, we would play and do these things. But the difference with her than from Stevie was that she wouldn't really want us to train on things alone. She would more watch. So if I had her, I would pony her a lot of places. So it would be like, I would ride Solana, one of my other horses, and Kaylee would watch. And then if I did it to her, she wouldn't be like icky about it. Then she'd be like, oh yeah, okay, great. So I would have to show her what we were going to do, but with another horse, and she would observe. It's really interesting. I've never had a horse do it quite like that. But that was my experience with her. So whenever we would do things like, well, I would saddle, I would have one of the other horses that she really trusted, and I would saddle that horse, and then I would saddle her. And she had like this super strong confidence about her that she wasn't scared, but it was like, well, if that horse is doing it, I can definitely do it. It was more like that. And she was very specific with people. Like, she would never do anything bad or hurt any human, but if she didn't like you, if you weren't like super honest, or if you came in and you thought like you kind of like knew something, she would just like, she would plant her feet and good luck to you. You wouldn't pick up that foot even if you were the best Mustang trainer in this country, because she was like, no. Then a four-year-old kid could go in there and pick up the foot. She was just like, you needed to be honest. You needed to show her, like, really show her what you were going to do. And then she was like, okay, I'm okay with it. She was with me for almost 3 years. Then a man contacted me. He actually, I call him her brother, but I don't think they're brothers, but they were the same age, and they came from the same herd, and they were rounded up together, and he had her brother, and he was really interested in her, and for their young boy horse to have a friend. And I said, let's give it a shot, you know, because at that point, some of my horses had slowed down and gotten older, and they were in a new pasture situation, and Kaylee was kind of like, wanted to run and do stuff, and I didn't feel like it was enough space for her, even if it is a pretty big pasture, and it wasn't as stimulating, because they didn't have continuously grazing opportunity, and I was working, and I was doing a lot of other clients at that point, and my older horses, they didn't really care as much. They're like, yeah, we'll come and feed us grain, and we're happy. But I felt like she would stand by the gate and just be like, I want to get out. And then when this opportunity came up, it was beautiful for her to go and be with her brother, Aspen, and they had the best time, and they're playing so much, and she's so happy there, and she loves going on trails and doing all this stuff with her a friend. And so that's how it turned out with her. So I think sometimes we get a horse and we think it's gonna be like our future, and that's kind of like I was hoping with Kaylee, that I was gonna get her and train her because she was big enough and all this stuff, and I was like, she's gonna be Solana's predecessor, like she's gonna take over after Solana, like she'll be my go-to girl that kind of like leads all the other horses that I get into training. But that wasn't, just because we as humans have an idea of what we'd like them to do doesn't mean that that is what's right for them. And this sat really well with me, and it turned out to be great, and I'm still in her life. And wow, Mustangs, man, I am so blown away, and I love all the Mustangs that I've met are unbelievably strong and also have this sense of self and knowledge of like their body and what they're capable of. And it's almost like, I don't think they spook the same. I mean, I might be completely wrong, but I'll just speak for the horses, the Mustangs that I know. It's almost like if I'm not sure, pretty sure that it's going to kill me, I'm not really going to get upset about it. And that sense of really like calm, I love about Mustangs. That would be my favorite feature that I think they have. Again, thank you all so much for listening. And let's all scratch all the stigmas about Mustangs. A horse is a horse is a horse. Let's treat them all the same. Let's love and respect all the horses, no matter what color they are, no matter what breed they are. And I'll just put it out there, a buckskin is just as much worth as any old plain brown horse. It's the personality that matters. It's who you are. We pick our friends from how they make us feel and how our relationship builds, not because how they look. So let's try to do that with our horses as well. And keep getting Mustangs, everyone. They're fantastic. And I can't wait for you all to send me some Mustang stories. Let's let's continue our conversation on Instagram, where you can find me, and also go to A Little Rescue, where you can follow all the rescue horses that we have and that are currently looking for homes. Thank you so much again for tuning in, and yeah, let's talk next week. Bye.